From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Grolot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and welcome to Worldviews. My guest today is Egyptian-American stand-up comedian Ahmed Ahmed. He made his directorial debut in 2011 with the documentary Just Like Us. Like,
they're your neighbors, they're, you know, your coworkers and friends, and fighting the negative stereotypes that have come up. I think that's an important thing.
The film followed several stand-up comedians through the Middle East and explored the cultures of Dubai, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt.
Comedians have kind of become cultural ambassadors. And whether you're in Africa or America or Russia or Asia, laughter is the common language of the world.
I'll talk with Ahmed about his career and comedy as a form of cultural diplomacy after this hour's news. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grolot. My guest today is Egyptian-American stand-up comedian Ahmed Ahmed. He's best known as a member of the Axis of Evil comedy tour. The group of four Middle Eastern comedians derived their name from President George W. Bush's 2002 State of the Union speech, where he used the term to describe Iran, Iraq, and North Korea.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world.
The comedians toured the Middle East for 6 years and even earned the praise of King Abdullah II after he attended their performance in Jordan. Ahmed Ahmed most recently directed the 2011 documentary Just Like Us. He started his career in Hollywood as an actor. Here he is on the Axis of Evil comedy tour describing his audition for a role in the 1996 Kurt Russell Steven Seagal film Executive Decision.
My agent called me and said, "We should go in and read for this part." I said, "What's the part?" She said, "Terrorist number four." Didn't even want to go in on the role. My agent said, "Go in and read for this part." I said, "All right, I'll just go in and meet the director." So I go and meet the director, the casting director. I read my lines over the top because I just wanted to have fun with it. The director went nuts. He was like, okay, do it one more time. "Sit down, you will obey, or I'll kill you in the name of Allah." He sat there, he was like, "Brilliant. That's exactly what we're looking for, Ahmed. I want to see you do it again, but this time give me a little bit more of that Middle Eastern. You know how your people are very." So I was like, "Angry?" "Yes, exactly. Use that hidden Middle Eastern anger that your people possess." So I used my hidden Middle Eastern anger that my people possess. And I got the part. My agent called me the next day, said they want to put you in this movie. I was like, I wasn't even trying for the role. I was making fun of it. She said, "Whatever you did, it worked. They want to put you in this film." I said, "Look, tell them I said thanks, but no thanks. Every time I take a part like this, it's like feeding the beast. It's like putting fuel on the flame. No way." Yeah. Thank you. And then she said, "They want to pay you $30,000 for a week of work." So I was like, burn it all down.
Ahmed Ahmed, welcome to Worldviews.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this discussion about humor. You're a comedian, and there is something about humor and comedy that is universal in nature. It's a kind of a common language. All cultures have something that they laugh about. You've said in the past that, you know, if we can laugh at ourselves, then the rest of the world can laugh with us. There's something perhaps therapeutic even in comedy. What is it about humor that transcends borders and that is really kind of brings us together?
Well, first of all, comedians have kind of become most recently sort of cultural ambassadors of the world. By letting people's guards down, and you find a way to figure out people's sensibilities through humor. And so when somebody's laughing at something or with you about something, not only are you having a chemical reaction, you're releasing endorphins, and, you know, some people believe laughter can cure diseases. So I think that there's this sort of, you know, you kind of take people off guard, and comedians are known to kind of push
the topic or the envelope, you know, just enough to where you don't cross the line, but you go right up to the line. And then you look over the cliff and you go, okay, I'm going to come back. But there's a sense of, you know, the documentary I made called Just Like Us was made to sort of explain that despite cultural and religious differences, everybody laughs alike. And whether you're in Africa or America or Russia or Asia, laughter is the common language of the world. And so everybody can find something funny to laugh at. And it could be serious. It could be lighthearted. It could be political. It could be, you know, satirical. It could be family orientated. There's so many levels of humor. So, and it's all subjective. So you can't really say one thing is funny next to the other. It's all what you, you know, how you sort of perceive it.
So there are some things clearly that we all understand. So when you make jokes about your dad, for example, you know, I could totally get that because I, you know, could make jokes about my dad. But yeah. Are there some things that don't quite cross cultures, some things that you can't touch, some things that don't translate well from one language to another or one culture to another?
There's certainly regional things. Like if you go to Egypt and try to do like 7-Eleven jokes, it's not going to work because they don't have 7-Eleven. So the obvious is on the table. But, you know, there are certain things that I don't find funny. And I've had heated discussions and arguments with other comedians who disagree. But like, I never touch like handicapped people. I don't think, you know, rape is funny. I don't think, you know, cancer is funny. Unless you have cancer and you want to talk about it from your own perspective, but from an outside perspective, I don't find it healing to talk about something that you're not educated on. I've seen people like one-man show, one-woman show type of, you know, acts where people actually were diagnosed with cancer and did a whole, you know, shtick about it. But yeah, there's certain things that are taboo that I think that are off limits, and those are some of them. But, you know, overall, you know, family is a universal kind of thing to laugh at because, you know, everybody has a dad, everybody has a mom, whether you know them or not. But there's that sense of dysfunction that happens with families. And whether it's a Middle Eastern family or an American family, there's always
everybody gets that.
There's always comedy fodder. Nobody's safe.
Yeah. Well, I have to push on this a little bit because I watched a few things about you on YouTube, and you were making some jokes about being on the watch list or the
right.
No-fly list
right.
And kind of, you know, making some jokes about terrorism and terrorists.
I got to fly to London at the end of the month, and I hate flying because my name's on like 9 lists. I Googled my name, and it matches the name of a guy in the Middle East who's a terrorist. I think he's in the Middle East Googling me going, there's this guy in America, man. People go up to him, hey, man, you're so funny telling me a joke. I'm not the comedian. I'm a terrorist. Want me to prove it to you? I'll blow myself up right now, I swear. I hate flying, though, because I always have to go through the TSA. They always stop me and go, Mr. Ahmed, we're going to have to pat down your midsection. So I always look at him and I go, promise? Whenever I get on a plane, I always know who the air marshal is. Yeah, it's always the guy sitting there holding the People magazine upside down looking right at me.
Is that a subject that's a bit taboo? Do you find that in the United States, for example, that there's some sensitivity to that kind of comedy?
Well, you know, that material was specific for a certain time. It still is relevant because I still get stopped and detained sometimes. Not as much, but certainly right after September 11th, I spent a lot of time in detainee rooms and was even thrown in jail a couple times because they mistook me for being a terrorist. So when I talk about stuff like that, I'm not doing it to, you know, make fun of our system or aviation authorities. This is what happened to me. It's my personal experience. And, you know, a lot of people found it funny because I was sort of the poster child or voice for that, you know, I hate to say it, but victim, if you will, of the circumstances of 9/11. I was sort of caught in the crossfire. Yeah, I mean, I try to be sensitive because, look, at the end of the day, I'm American. I was born in Egypt, raised here, but I follow the law. I pay my taxes. I'm a, you know, trying to contribute to society as much as I can. So I want to respect you know, this country and the government and the system, but I also want to report the news. And that's what comedians do. We report the news, and we do it through whatever personal experiences we go through. So if I'm getting arrested at the airport, this morning I was flying through LAX, Los Angeles Airport, to get here, and I went through the new X-ray machines where you put your hands over your head.
The really invasive ones that do the little X-ray of you, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
And I had pulled out a pack of gum that I had in my pocket that was unopened. And I just had it in my hand. And when I came through, the guy said, what's in your hand? And I said, it's just a pack of gum. He's like, yeah, we got to run that. So, I thought he was joking. Yeah. I go, it's gum. You can have a stick if you want. He's like, no, we just got to run it through the X-ray just to make sure. I'm like, oh, okay, so now I'm the gum bomber.
Now, do you still get a sense that this is because of some sort of profile that you fit?
I don't know if it's necessarily that. I think they're just doing their jobs.
Anybody holding a pack of gum would have been.
Yeah, I mean, you look at me. I'm 6'3", hairy, and brown. So, you know, they're not going to – I don't think they're questioning your gum, but they're going to question my gum. I don't know. I think there's a sense of – you know, visual mischief that they think might be going on when they see me. I don't know.
But this definitely gives you some material.
Oh, I guess. I mean, I was telling my friend on the phone what happened, and they were laughing, you know, and they were like, you should talk about that on stage. And that's my point, is like I have to exercise that out of my soul, or else it's just going to be trapped in me and make me frustrated.
Well, is it your ethnic background that has really kind of led you down this path, do you think, of comedy? Is there something you find interesting? And I want to mention that you actually received the first annual Richard Pryor Award for ethnic comedy.
Yeah, that was cool.
So this is really interesting, though, for ethnic comedy. I mean, ethnic comedy is becoming more popular. People kind of, you know, finding laughter in a particular ethnic background exposure. How do you explain that?
Well, to go back to the award, it was Richard Pryor's first and last award that he had given out, because he had passed away soon after that. And it was in Edinburgh, Scotland, at the comedy festival there. And he had created this fund and foundation to award comics who were talking about their ethnicity, and because he was really big on that. And so, you know, getting an award like that was a big milestone for me, because it was like, oh, okay, finally there's, you know, an American iconic comedian who's recognizing what I'm trying to say, talk about hate crimes, talk about my background, talk about my religious upbringing.
Because he certainly found a lot of humor in his own racial background.
Oh, yeah.
And right? That's why I think he would be.
Yeah. And he pushed the limit with it, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's when, you know, African Americans in America were, you know, not considered funny people. You know, he kind of opened the door for all that. That's when Eddie Murphy and Chris Rock and Martin Lawrence, they all came in after that. But he really opened the door for them and paved the path. You know, there are a lot of ethnic comics out there, especially from the Middle East and East Indian and even Asian, because our media, unfortunately, kind of is very linear when it comes to other cultures. You know, if you watch certain news programs, and I won't mention them, but it's very one-sided. They don't show the whole story. And so comics have used that as an excuse to really show the rest of the world, this is what we're about. This is what we eat at home. This is what we do after work. This is what my children do after school. This is how we have, you know, fun on the weekends. It's a way of expressing yourself and sharing your point of view, which isn't shared in the news oftentimes. I, you know, my background is Egyptian American, but then I was raised Muslim, and I do this whole explanation in my movie, Just Like Us, that there's a difference between Arabs and Muslims. Most Arabs are Muslim, but most Muslims aren't even Arab.
Like, actually, there's Arabs and Muslims, like, living in America. Like, they're your neighbors, they're, you know, your coworkers and friends, and fighting the negative stereotypes that have come up. I think that's an important thing.
Americans are ignorant when it comes to Middle Eastern countries. I mean, I'm really ignorant when it comes to Middle Eastern countries.
And people in the West, man, they always try to categorize us, put us all together. A lot of people come up to me and they're like, oh man, hey, where are you from? I go, I'm from Egypt. Really? I got a friend from India.
Moreover, the sweeping change brought by modernity and globalization led many Muslims to view the West as hostile to the traditions of Islam.
We in America think we're the best at everything, and we understand the way we do things, and it makes sense to us, but some people don't understand the way we do things, and it's kind of the same with them.
So trying to decipher that is another sort of element to the variables of explaining who I am.
I'm speaking with stand-up comedian Ahmet Ahmed about his latest film, Just Like Us. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. I'm Suzette Grelot, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews on KGOU. I'm Suzette Grelot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. My guest is Egyptian-American stand-up comedian and director Ahmet Ahmed. Just before the break, he described how he uses comedy to promote awareness about his background, upbringing, and ethnicity. I want to touch on something you just said earlier, and that is comedians are cultural ambassadors of some sort. I mean, how is it that this can actually translate into a cultural diplomacy?
Well, you know, I again, going back, referring to the documentary I made, I took 11 American comics to Dubai, Lebanon, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, made this documentary called Just Like Us. We ended up getting into the Tribeca Film Festival, which is Robert De Niro's film festival, and he showed up at the premiere, and I got to meet him, and it was like a big thing for me because I was, you know, he's one of the reasons I wanted to get into entertainment.
Absolutely.
And then somebody in Barack Obama's camp, I guess, was at the festival and saw my movie, and I was invited to the White House for his iftar dinner, which I would have never, you would never invite somebody like me to the White House for a dinner with Barack Obama had I not made this piece of art that was a cultural awareness, you know. And then Hillary Clinton had a sort of competing iftar dinner, and I got invited to that one as well. So I'm looking back at my life going, wow, I tell jokes and stories for a living. I made a documentary about it, and here I am getting invited to the White House. It was very surreal, and having them sort of pat you on the back and say what you're doing is great work, even though you don't think it is. One by one, you're breaking down stereotypes to the average person that doesn't know anything about your culture.
So by doing that, would you consider yourself kind of an activist or a diplomat or both?
No, I don't like to put that title on me because I'm not. But if other people want to give it to me, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to deny it. But I don't, you know, walk around with a sign saying I'm the guy, you know.
But you're using your voice to promote awareness about who you are and your part of the world. And
yeah. And, you know, a lot of it just comes from frustration. You know, the comedians are professional complainers. That's what we do. We complain.
And they're very good at that.
We complain professionally and we get paid for it. And
that's
then,
why it's funny, because most of us, you know, can't do it in a
Yeah, and people laugh
way.
And they go, oop, I was thinking
yeah.
the same thing
yeah,
or
right.
whatever. And so and we just say things that are on people's minds. And but, yeah, I guess subliminally there is a diplomatic message happening there of cross-cultural awareness and you know, trying to come together through laughter, or whether it's music or food or whatever it is, you know, artistically or culturally people can connect with. And I think laughter is certainly one of the top three or four, you know, universal things in life that we all accept and share.
Right. We all eat and we all laugh.
We all eat, we all laugh, we all love music.
That's right.
I used to ask people, I'd say when I used to promote comedy shows when I first started out, I used to literally go walking up and down Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood and pass out these flyers to people in the street. And my opening question was, do you like comedy? And 99% were like, of course, who doesn't?
Yeah.
But there's always that 1% that's like, no, leave me alone.
I hate to laugh. Leave me alone.
Yeah, who likes to laugh?
Must be an alien of some sort.
I used to, from here.
They are.
Yeah, I used to do a joke. I'd say, you know, like some of our greatest prophets and leaders, you know, must have had a sense of humor. Like Jesus Christ must have had a sense of humor. Otherwise, he wouldn't have had that many followers. Like people are going to go like, hey, you know what? That guy looks really sad. Let's go see what he's up to.
Yeah, right.
Like nobody's going to
follow the sad guy.
Yeah, let's go follow the sad guy. No, yeah, Jesus was like, you know, probably a great storyteller and had a charisma and a lightness about him. And, you know, people like that. It's infectious.
Well, I have to ask you, and we're short on time, but I have to ask you, you're from Egypt. There's an awful lot going on in Egypt today, an awful lot of violence. It's troubling to read the news every day about what's going on in Egypt and elsewhere in the Middle East. But as an Egyptian, what are your thoughts about what's going on? And is there any, you know, chance that we can maybe laugh someday about what is transpiring in Egypt?
Well, it's ironic because Egypt is known for its the people having a sense of humor. So they're actually considered the Hollywood of the Middle East. More movies and television programs come out of Egypt than any other country in the Middle East. And so you oftentimes find other cultures in the Middle East, Lebanon, Saudi, Dubai, Jordan, Palestine, watching and learning from the Egyptians. And you know, we're sort of considered the clowns of the Middle East, always cracking jokes and have this sort of gregarious, you know, way about us. And so it's ironic to see that even though the people have that, there's still this uprising of, excuse me, political justice that's just not happening. And you know, I was just there in November, and so there was mixed feelings and mixed messages about, you know, the new president Morsi, and is he going to end up being a dictator, and is it going to be the same kind of regime that Mubarak had? And so right now there's sort of like a big question mark over Egypt. And Egypt, have you been?
I've not been yet, no.
I call it Avatar. It's its own planet. There's nobody tells Egypt what to do. There's 85 million people. It's a hard country to kind of control and monetize.
Yeah.
There's just so much. And, you know, Cairo alone has 30 million. So the traffic is bad. The smog is bad. The homeless has gotten worse. You know, kids, you know, getting cancer from all the pesticides and all the, you know, crap that's in the air. And there needs to be some sort of facelift, I think. And, you know, it's great that the rest of the world is watching and that the people are actively involved with going out on the streets and protesting and peacefully and trying to have some sort of justice. But I think it's all going to be up to how the government, you know, plays into this all, because right now, you know, Egypt has a little bit of a black eye on the country because of this new installed government. And, you know, I don't know, actually. It's sort of an open-ended question.
It's hard to tell at this point.
Hard to tell.
Well, Ahmed, thank you so much for joining us on Worldviews today for this conversation.
So great to be here. Thank you very much.
That was stand-up comedian Ahmed Ahmed, the director of the 2011 documentary Just Like Us. You can watch the film's trailer and find video of Ahmed Ahmed's 2010 TED Talk in Doha, Qatar, on our website, kgou.org. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this program. Write to us by email at worldviews@ou.edu or send us a tweet at worldviewskgou. KGOU produces Worldviews alongside the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. Mackenzie Samus prepared the research for this interview. Brian Hardzinski produces this program. And special thanks to KGOU's Colin Tyler for helping to make this interview possible. For KGOU and the OU College of International Studies, I'm Suzette Rolat.